Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Here's the podcast from Middays with Susie Larson. Enjoy the conversation. It's only just a matter of Welcome to Middays. I'm Susie Larson. So honored to have you listening today. In fact, I look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that inspire you in your faith walk, that deepen your understanding of God's Word, and that heighten your awareness of God's very real presence in your life. And here on Middays, we talk about issues that ignite your faith, that deepen your understanding of God's heart for you and His heart for the world. Today may be a tough show for some, but I'm praying you'll hang in there with us because it's an important, important topic. If you've listened to me on the radio over the years, you know I've talked about this topic. Actually, I try to do it 2-3 times a year just to keep it in front of us. Many people think that slavery ended hundreds of years ago when, in fact, there are more slaves today than ever before. Slavery is a multi-billion dollar industry. It's driven by greed, and often it's overlooked by local legal systems. Slave owners steal, use, and abuse precious people, people made in God's image, for the sake of profit. I want you to think about that. One of my favorite organizations in the world is International Justice Mission. They are confronting the world's worst bullies. They're rescuing the oppressed, and they're changing local government systems, helping them to see the value of human beings and the importance of a just system. Joining me in studio today are two friends from IJM, Susan Umler and John Good. We'll get them on in a moment. A quick announcement coming up very, very soon is our Writers Conference. If you have a desire to be published, we have a desire to see you there. It's coming up July 12th and 13th. We're still giving away scholarships. You can find that information on the web. Go to our website. You'll find it on the homepage, myfaithradio.com. I hope you can join us. I'm telling you, we've assembled an A-list level of faculty of editors, agents, and experts here to help you, to serve. I will be there. I can't wait to meet you. All right, let me tell you about my guests. We'll get them on the show. Susan Umler serves as IJM's Director of Strategic Partnerships for the Midwest. She meets with supporters across the Midwest to provide opportunities for engagement in this work of justice. She's worked in the fundraising field for 14 years at various nonprofits, including World Vision, Caring Bridge, the Science Museum of Minnesota. She and her husband, Clayton, have a daughter and live in the Minneapolis area. John Good serves as one of International Justice Mission's church mobilization directors. He helps to equip churches by sharing the biblical call to justice, introducing churches to IJM's ministry, and mobilizing churches to engage in local and global justice ministries. He is also based in Minneapolis. He's married to Peggy. She's a hospice chaplain, and he's a proud father of two young adult daughters. In his spare time, he enjoys athletics and volunteers as a fire chaplain in his hometown. This is the one time I'll have you talk at the same time. Susan and John, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Thank you, Susie.
Looking so forward to this conversation, and we love to start every single day talking scripture. And Susan, I'll start with you, wondering if there's a verse, either a life verse or just one you've been thinking about these days you can share with us.
Yeah, probably more my life verse, I would say, at least for the past probably 15 years, is that second part of John 10:10, just that reality that Jesus does come, that we can all have incredibly full life. And I always relate that to, I want that to be everything in life, friendships and family and the food I eat and the activities I partake in, and just that heart of God that He wants that for every single person on earth.
You know, I just have to just pause here because I remember at one of the global prayer gatherings when Gary Haugen, founder of IJM, which we'll get into that in a minute, but he talked about joy and the importance of living in the tension, especially when you have a front row seat, Susan, to see some of the world's greatest atrocities and to enter into suffering, you know. And he talked about living in the tension of carrying the burden of God's heart, but still not forgetting to enjoy your food and the blessings of God. And I know you guys at IJM work very hard on that. It's not sustainable if you don't. I mean, say a word, if you would, about what that's been like for you.
Yeah, that is incredibly true at IJM. There's a set of spiritual disciplines that we practice together as a staff throughout the year that I think provide some of that space for rest and reflection and just for God to care for you. But as a staff, we are very good at being silly too and laughing at each other and having a great time. And we take our work incredibly seriously. But in order for us, like you said, to be able to really do that and do it well and do it for the long term, you do have to be able to actually enjoy those great things in life that exist as well.
So good. Okay, John, how about you?
I would say Matthew 25 has really become for me a compelling and life-giving chapter.
Leave it up to a pastor. He picks a whole chapter.
Right.
I love that.
Just the second half.
Okay.
You know, with all of my theological training and with my daily devotions and in the couples group my wife and I are in, the men's group, I want to see Jesus. And Jesus himself says, if you want to see me, feed the hungry, clothe the naked, take care of the sick, house the homeless, visit the prisoner. And guess what? You will see me in their faces. And that, I just have to keep reminding myself, it's not my intellectual ability to crack open scripture and find the nuggets. Sometimes, although that's very helpful, but sometimes it just means getting out of my bubble and visiting the poor. That's how Jesus says I can always see him.
Wow. Before we dig into just what IJM does and how you can possibly get involved, I want you to know we've got five copies. This is one of my older books that I wrote in conjunction with International Justice Mission. It's called Embracing Your Freedom, A Personal Experience of God's Heart for Justice. Half the royalties actually go to IJM. This is like boot camp for the soul, where you're going after your freedom, and at the end of each chapter, you pray for your freedom, and then you pray for her freedom, a girl in captivity. And in between chapters, there's stories from IJM of rescues of girls who've been rescued and been restored. Five copies, and then we've got two copies of Gary Haugen's book, Good News About Injustice, A Witness of Courage in a Hurting World. This is a spectacular book. You can email to get in on the drawing, middays@myfaithradio.com. You can text 877-933-2484. Just don't forget that mailing address. Okay, Susan, let's start here, and you both can speak to it, but I'll just start with you. Yeah. Talk about the inception of IJM. Gary Haugen, you know, he was a lawyer for our government.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Yeah, so Gary was a lawyer for the Department of Justice working on cases actually of police abuse of power in the United States. And then shortly after that, it was actually essentially loaned out to the United Nations right after the Rwandan genocide. He deployed to Rwanda and was the lead investigator to really confirm essentially what had gone on there and that it was indeed a genocide. So he led that investigation. And a lot of what he had witnessed there and the work he had seen, because he had also traveled the world before that and through his life in the law, he had this growing conviction of where was the justice system in those communities? How are some of these atrocities just allowed to happen? And specifically, if you're thinking about the Rwandan genocide, where was law enforcement to protect its own citizens? And then his larger question was, and where were the people of God? Where Amen. Were the people who were supposed to be withholding the hand of the oppressor in that situation? And so he kind of thought about that for the following three or so years, had lots of conversations with friends and family, and then ultimately in 1997 opened IJM essentially in his house with just a small number of employees, and it's grown from there.
Wow. And tell me, both of you can speak to this. I'll start with you, John. Where are you now? I mean, IJM is the largest, if I know right, the largest anti-slavery organization in the world right now, right?
The largest international one, yes.
Wow.
We have about 1,000 employees. We have 19 field offices in the global south that are in 11 countries. And then we have other countries that don't do actual casework of rescuing and restoring survivors, but raise awareness and raise funds and raise partners in the effort.
Remember, I took a trip with IJM a few years ago, Kevin and I did, to Guatemala, and we got to meet some of the field workers there. And to sit around a dinner table with them and to learn that they actually had to take a different way home from work on a regular basis just to change up their routine because their work is that dangerous. And and when they came to the U.S. for a global prayer gathering, and so when their feet landed in the U.S., they actually exhaled because they felt safe. I mean, we see what's on the news and we get all nervous, but I don't think people realize how these dear souls put themselves in harm's way for this work.
Yeah. I mean, our field staff are, in my opinion, just heroes.
Yeah.
It is not an exaggeration to say that they truly do put their lives on the line in all different spheres of our staff, no matter where they are around the world, no matter what their job is. They really are putting their lives on the line. And they are so dedicated to the work, though. To our conversation earlier, the continued joy they have in the midst of their work is absolutely incredible. But they are amazing, amazing individuals.
So where are things at with slavery these days?
Well, the current estimates are that there's approximately 40 million slaves in the world today. they're in every country. It's all over the world. There's really no country that is immune to slavery. And it's a variety of different forms. That could be bonded labor. It could be sexual trafficking. But it's a pervasive problem globally.
And how is a person, I mean, there are times when vulnerable souls, you know, I always pray, put a firewall between the wicked and the weak, because it's the weak that are the most vulnerable. You know, the poor, they're the most vulnerable, because they seem, you know, because predators prey on those who don't have somebody to stand in the gap for them. But there are some who are unknowingly baited in to human trafficking, to slavery, to cyber sex trafficking, thinking they're helping their families, and even times where parents are, you know, handing over their daughter to a neighbor, yeah, because he's taking them to a local town to work. Say more about how that happens.
Yeah, so every story is obviously different, but a typical story that you could hear, let's say it's in India, there could be a family who has a family member fall ill, and they don't have the money for the medication. And so what happens is a powerful person in the community who owns, say, a brick kiln, gets in contact with that family and says, oh, I'll provide you that loan. It could be the equivalent of 15 U.S. dollars or 100 U.S. dollars. You know, I'll give you that loan. You can go get that medicine. And then this will be real simple. You just come and you work at my brick kiln and you can work off your loan. So they'll accept the loan. The family member will get the medical treatment. But essentially what happens is that family is then taken to that brick kiln. And it's almost a bait and switch. They are physically kept in that brick kiln. They're not allowed to leave. There's a tremendous violence usually associated with it. And they never actually can pay off the debt. The debt just continues to accrue. And they are incredibly vulnerable because they are physically removed from their community. And then in addition, there's violence. They're working horribly long hours. They don't get any pay. And that it's just kind of a trap, essentially.
Mm. And there are times when there are whole families in this kind of bonded slavery where children are having to work. Young children are working these same long hours, still battered, abused. There's rape and there's violence happening within the scope of this, you know, debt payoff, which, as you said, the debt keeps going. It just reminds me of such a demonic thing where the enemy lies and lies about debts that we owe, so to speak, you know, and keeps raising the standard and the bar, and you can never get there. And these poor souls feel like they're stuck and that there is no free. Well, they are stuck unless someone stands up in the gap.
Right. And often there's nothing in writing. Mm-hmm. And even if there were, often these families don't read anyway. And so they really are lured in by somebody that they trust, who appears to be a rescuer, and then, as you say, turns the tables, and they are stuck. Often, if they are able to escape, the police are sometimes sent after them. The police beat them up, return them to that brick kiln, and the police get a payoff. And so the hopelessness is even exacerbated further, and you begin to think, there is no way out.
Mm. Wow, we're going to pause here. When we come back, I want you to give us insight a little bit, if you would, on the human trafficking element. That's the bonded slavery. Then there's human trafficking. There's also land grabbing. I just want to get a little education on some of these things so people know what's going on. And then we'll talk about the work of IJM, that you go in not only rescuing these dear souls, but you help enforce a just system. But how do you do that? Because it's tricky if you've got corrupt police officers. It's very tricky. But IJM has found a way to do that. We've got 5 copies of my book, Embracing Your Freedom. This is really about your own personal contending for the freedom God has for you, but as you do that, you get a heart for the freedom of those in captivity. And then 2 copies of Gary Haugen's really brilliant book, Good News About Injustice. Email or text. Email middays@myfaithradio.com. Text 877-933-2484. We'll be back in a minute. Thanks for tuning in to Middays. I'm Susie Larson, talking to my friends from International Justice Mission. You could go to their website, ijm.org, and spend an hour there just to look at the amazing work that this organization does. Really, my favorite, just my favorite. And we've got 2 friends from IJM, Susan Umler and John Good. I've got 5 copies of my book, Embracing Your Freedom, and that is a book I wrote kind of in conjunction with IJM, just with permission. We've got stories of rescue in there, but it's about contending for your freedom and then contending for her freedom. Also, 2 copies of Gary Haugen's book, Good News About Injustice. Email or text in. Your address will put you in the drawing, 877-933-2484 or middays at myfaithradio.com. So let's talk. We talked a bit about bonded slavery. Let's talk about human trafficking and land grabbing, just so friends know what we're talking about here. How does someone fall into the prey of human trafficking?
Yeah, again, I feel like it's easy to give an example so it is a little more concrete. But if you're talking about a girl in a community who ends up being trafficked into sex trafficking, a lot of times it's a similar kind of coercion that happens where someone who is trusted by the community or by the family gets in contact with this girl, befriends her, and essentially promises, you know, I'll get you this great job. It will be hours away in a larger city, but you'll be able to support your family, you'll be able to accomplish your dreams, etc. And so that girl will end up going with that person, that trafficker, and then it's again a bait and switch. She's tricked. Mm-hmm. She's sold into a brothel or into a bonded labor scenario. So that's what a lot of that can be.
And, you know, as painful as this is to say, you just got to hear this. It's rape for profit. And it's, you know, we're not going to get into the details, but it's beyond your worst nightmare. And okay, how about land grabbing? I know that's most common in Africa, or is that happening other places as well?
Most common that we are aware in Africa. Mm-hmm. Our office in Uganda was started years ago with a focus on land grabbing or land theft. The laws of Uganda are such that if a woman is widowed, by law, she still owns the property. But the culture and the custom in Uganda and in other African countries is that the family of the deceased husband will then come onto that land and forcibly remove that woman. And the children. Because she doesn't know that the law is on her side, if she tries to fight, sometimes she's beaten. Other times the husband's family will come and say, no, you can stay here, and now you will be my third wife, and you will serve me, but your kids, I don't need or want them. And so it really is not just a loss of property, but it's a loss of safety, security, livelihood, future, everything.
Hmm. Remember one time Gary said that bullies really aren't that brave. They just need someone braver than them to stand up to them. And that makes me cry because I just feel like that is what IJM is doing, is to going, you know, this isn't okay. And I know they didn't want years ago, you know, there was that whole thing kicking down the door kind of thing. And they don't want that persona. We're not heroes. You are. I'm sorry, but you are. But the fact is you're very delicately working with systems, trying to change systems. So you're rescuing people, trying to change systems, trying to show those local governments the power of a just system, because they don't all believe that, Susan. I mean, there are some that were, as you were saying, John, that the police, they're paid off. And yet when someone gets a handle on that, your whole community will thrive if you have a just system. How do you go about trying to change mindsets in that regard?
Yeah. Well, the work of IJM is all based in partnering with the local justice system and other nonprofits in the communities in which we work. So much of our work is purely building relationships that are trusting relationships with local police and government officials and other nonprofits and the community in general, and churches and really anyone that we can partner with in those communities. And the key piece of what we're doing is we partner with the police to rescue victims from the situation of violence that they find themselves in, then to partner with other organizations to help provide the restoration and the care they need to be restored to lives where they can really be in a position of safety and strength, and then actually taking those cases up against the perpetrators to hold them accountable through the justice system. And the fourth piece is the kind of longer overarching work of really doing that exact work of partnering alongside police and judges and prosecutors to help train and equip them so that they can really enforce their own laws and protect their own citizens.
It's almost like you come along as a silent, quiet partner with all of this training. I mean, these are amazing law enforcement officials, lawyers, who really could be making a lot of money other places, but they're engaging on this level to train quietly. But it's like the local law enforcement gets the credit. It's like because you're training them and you're backing off and letting them have the win. It is such a beautiful Christ-like model to me, and it blows my mind when I think about it.
And if I could add, we operate from a Romans 13 model, where Paul says that people in authority are God's appointed representatives. Now, sometimes our staff may look around and say, boy, God, I think you might have made a mistake there. But the fact of the matter is, our model is not to put to shame or to embarrass or to humiliate those in power, but to build them up. And there's always someone that is doing a good job. It may not be very visible, but we have a theory at IGM. We call it the 10-80-10 rule. We think that 10% of those in authority in these countries, you know what, they probably are corrupt and always will be. But we also believe there's also a 10% who are not corrupt and whose moral compass is pure, true north, and they always will be. And then there's that 80% in the middle. And that 80% are going to go with whomever is getting the affirmation. And in too many of these countries, for too long, the 10% to the bad have been getting all of the rewards. So we find the good, and we start to shine a light on them, and we run that up the chain of command, and we say, look at what your people are doing so well in this part of the country. We want to help you do that better.
And wish there was time to talk about so many of the miracles. And I remember a story where there was, Gary was on a trip with some of the IGM staff, and he was way late into I don't know why they had to go to a different town, but he was in some little village and did not know why he was there. And there was a man sitting on the steps and who he'd met, and the man had been sitting there and had heard about IGM and heard about the justice that they were bringing. And when Gary walked up to meet him, he would have been praying that God would bring Gary Haugen to his town. It was this tiny little town in the middle of who knows where in a third world country, but it was this very distinct answer to prayer. And then he gave him just some insight into what was happening in that village, and IGM was to be able to move in. And, you know, we've got just about a minute here, so I'm not going to have you talk about this on the other side, and both of you would love to, but just the times where you've worked hard on a case and only to be picked off by a corrupt police officer, how do you regroup? I remember a time, and I know there's been plenty of times, where you've worked on something, you were so near a rescue of a bunch of girls from a brothel or a whole community from a brick kiln, and it was a police officer who tipped them off, and suddenly you get there, and the rescue has gone to pieces because of corruption. And then you have this happens to you a time and time again, and you have to pick yourself back up, and you've got to pray and get new strategy. I want to know what that's like for you. How do you regroup? What do you do on the other side? And also on the other side of the break, we're going to talk about something called Freedom Sunday. I've just got a text going, how can I get involved? Freedom Sunday is a way you can get involved. Your churches can get involved. And we'll tell you exactly how. So much more to talk about. We welcome your questions. You can text them in, 877-933-2484. Also text in your address if you want in on the drawing for one of the Freedom books or one of Gary Haugen's books. Or email me, middays@myfaithradio.com. Again, the number is 877-933-2484. We'll be back in a minute. For tuning in to Middays, I'm Susie Larson, having a fantastic conversation in studio with Susan Umler and John Good of International Justice Mission, really one of my favorite organizations. Kevin and I have been supporting the organization for a long time. We love the work of IJM. Slavery is, there are more slaves in the world today than ever before. We're talking about different forms, bonded slavery, human trafficking, so many injustices against the vulnerable. And IJM steps in and stands in the gap, helps to rescue the oppressed, to hold accountable the world's worst bullies, and then hopefully to help change some systems, the justice systems. And Susan and John, you know, before the break, I was saying how this is such tedious work because you are lawyers and law enforcement officials. You cross every T, you dot every I, as you should, and I think that's really amazing. But there have been times you guys have worked meticulously on a significant rescue only to get to the place where you're going to rescue a group of girls from a brothel or a community from a brick kiln to find out a corrupt police officer has tipped off the slave owner, and you get there and the girls are gone or the community's gone. Talk about how you pick up the pieces. What do you do after something like that?
Yeah, well, a central piece of our work is prayer. We stop multiple times a day to pray specifically for our staff and the work we're doing around the world. And that is the automatic default of IJM in good and hard times. So one example that comes to mind, when we first opened our office in Ghana and we had done our first rescue, one of the perpetrators who was arrested essentially was connected to people in high places. And what ended up happening was that in order to work in that community, we have a memorandum of understanding that was set up with the government. And that essentially was pulled for a bit of time. So we weren't really able to do any more rescues. So our work, what felt like, just came to a standstill for about, it was about close to a year and a half in Ghana. And every single day at IJM headquarters and around the world in our offices, we prayed for breakthrough. We prayed for miracles to happen so that the people in the positions of power would have a change of heart, or that new people would come into power. And in, about a year and a half after that original situation happening, through just the natural election system in Ghana, all the people in power who had been opposing the work of IJM essentially were not reelected, and all new people came into power that have been incredibly collaborative and supportive of our work. And that was just, it was nothing short of miraculous.
Wow. Did you want to add anything?
Well, the other story I would speak of is probably the hardest one in the life of IJM. 3 years ago, our colleague Willie Kimani, a Kenyan, was representing a client, and as they were leaving the courthouse after a hearing, Willie, the client, and their driver were abducted by the police and disappeared for a week. A week later, their bodies, all three, were found. They'd been tortured. They'd been dumped in the river. And the clear message was, IJM, don't mess with us. Go away. After our Kenyan colleagues got over their grief and their shock, they doubled down.
Wow.
And they said, now that Willie has been martyred, we are even more committed to this fight. And right now, there's a trial that's been going on now for almost 3 years. There are four Kenyan police officers. And if they are guilty and convicted, we trust and believe that that may turn the tide against police corruption. So we are relentless.
Yeah.
And our staff on the ground are fearless.
And prayer is just, amen. And prayer is such a big thing. On the flip side, you've had rescues. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think one of the biggest rescues you had was something like 500?
Yeah, I think 550 or a little bit over that was the largest rescue.
550 slaves in one rescue.
Correct.
It's mind-boggling.
Yeah.
Wow. I just don't even know what to say to that. It's just so that you have wins, you have rescues, you've got stories, and you can find those on the website as well. But there's battles behind the scenes. And one thing I remember when we went to Guatemala is just the honesty behind, there was joy in the staff. They were so grateful for the tiniest little breakthroughs, but they also admitted they had bad dreams because of things that they'd seen. This is just the reality, and this is hard work. And so let's talk, if we can. People are asking, how can I get involved? And I want to talk about Freedom Sunday, because this is a brilliant idea to get churches involved on a larger scale to see what God could do.
So Freedom Sunday, this will be the fourth year that IJM is offering Freedom Sunday, and this is an invitation for congregations to learn about modern-day slavery and to partner with IJM to end it. Now, I was a pastor for 15 years, and often those conversations about injustice, they stopped either at the elder board or the mission committee or the justice team, and those were great conversations. But Freedom Sunday is our effort to take a message of biblical justice beyond those committees so that each and every person who walks through the door of your church that weekend will hear from the pulpit and in the music and maybe through a video or a story, a strong message of God's heart for justice and a way to respond to it and to act.
Mm, wow. So let's say someone is in a position of influence where they could appeal to their pastor saying, could we engage on Freedom Sunday? Because it's the same Sunday for everybody, right?
Well, we offer it as September 22nd, but honestly, if the church wants to choose a different Sunday that works better in their calendar,
that's great.
They are free to do that, and we will give them the resources to customize it around their calendar.
So what do those resources look like?
Well, we have suggested sermon outlines or topics or passages. We have video resources of stories, some of which you've heard today, people in the field who've been rescued who can speak to that. We have suggestions of what music might lend itself well. We have resources for children and youth so that everyone can be involved in the congregation, and it's all on our website.
Very good. Well, people do love to hear rescue stories, stories of restoration, and I know you both have probably a number of them to share, but Susan, let's start with you. Is there one just even meeting somebody after the fact, as you're on the field oftentimes after the rescue and connecting with women and men and children who've come through this horrific trauma? What have you learned? Who have you met?
Yeah, I actually just this past February was in our Guatemala office and had the incredible opportunity to meet one of the clients that had been rescued many years ago. I'll call her Sarah. I didn't actually even get into the whole details of her story. What impacted me most was she was at this point 21 or 22 years old. And the resiliency that had just risen in her life was tremendous. I got to spend a couple hours with her. And when you would touch on a subject that she was excited about, she would just light up. And the few things that she spoke about specifically that just brought such hope to me in knowing that restoration really is possible is, number one, she said she was working really hard to become bilingual. She wanted to learn English and Spanish because she wanted to travel the world. And I just loved that she had that excitement in her to travel the world. And she also talked about how she wanted to become a social worker and work for IJM someday because she wanted to help people the way that she had been helped. And then she also spoke about her desire to get married someday, and immediately following it, she said, but I want to adopt kids right away because I want to make sure that kids who are hurting in my country have a safe home to come to. And it was so powerful just hearing her story and meeting her.
Wow. How about you, John?
I would share a story in Ghana. So our office in Ghana opened about 4 years ago, and our work in Ghana is rescuing children who are trafficked to work on the fishing boats on Volta Lake, which is the largest artificial lake in the world. Our first 4 years, we would investigate and build up a case against these boat owners who are trafficking these children, and we would get them arrested and rescue the children. And that was working. But last fall, we decided to take an additional angle, and that was to approach the pastors in one village on the lake and teach the pastors about biblical justice so that they could share this message in their congregations. And we knew that some of the members of their churches owned boats and were trafficking children.
Wow.
So we did that last fall. We trained pastors over 2 days at a conference. And what we were thrilled to find out was that among those pastors, they had invited a couple boat owners who, after hearing God's message of biblical justice in a new way, approached my colleagues at IJM and said, we are now convicted at the heart, and we would like to hand over our children to IJM. So we're calling it the Bible Rescue. Hmm. It's the first time in the history of IJM that we haven't had to go after the bad guys. They've come to us because of the power of the Holy Spirit convicting them and God's word doing
Absolutely
so.
Absolutely amazing. Also got a text, you know, how else can I volunteer? I know there's different initiatives, just different ways. I mean, one of the ones I learned about years ago when we first connected with IJM was a boy who had a plastic cup and it said loose change for loosening chains. And he just went around and collected change in his neighborhood and sent it into IJM. I mean, there are people who do justice runs and bake sales. I mean, there's really no end to what a person can do.
Yeah. There's, like you said, there really is no end. There's people who are prayer partners with IJM that commit to praying for our work and get weekly updates on exactly how to do that. You can become a Freedom Partner, which is a monthly donor to IJM at $24 or more a month. Really, that idea that you're showing you are giving $24 a day or a month, sorry, so that our staff can show up 24 hours a day. There's ways to get involved locally in your city. We have local volunteer teams around the country. As John was talking about, getting your church involved in Freedom Sunday. And then to your point, being able to just kind of on your own say, oh, I want to do a fundraiser. I want to kind of play my part. On our website at ijm.org, there's different ways to get involved. You can start a fundraiser. and get some ideas from that website of what other people have done, like a bake sale or a 5K, different things like that.
Mm. What would you both say is the most challenging part of this work for you, and it's just the stories that you hear, as far as so people can know and be praying for you?
Well, I would say when you fight evil, evil fights back.
That's right.
And the darkness with which we and our colleagues encounter each and every day can at times be overwhelming. Now, Susan and I, because we work here in the States, we are pretty far removed, but we work closely with people who day after day after day are on the front lines. So the prayer that Susan mentioned, that we, it's a daily part of our rhythm, is to spend an hour in prayer. And so our prayer partners that we encourage people to join us in prayer, those are not token partners. Prayer is integral to the success that we believe we've had.
Mm. You want to speak to that as well?
Yeah, I would say it is really those stories that you hear about, whether you're in the field visiting or in our daily prayer with colleagues, you're hearing about these very hard stories. It's almost like a double-edged sword of, part of it is to kind of protect yourself. You almost feel like, well, I can't let every single story absolutely destroy me. But then you don't want to become callous to it either. So there's kind of this line you walk as a staff member, trying to be impacted and still have those stories really mean something, because they are critical and they are someone's actual story. And also being able to let go of that burden and hand it over and really pray about it and just say, okay, this is not my weight to carry. I have my role to play in it, but this is God's weight.
Hmm. We're going to pause here. When we come back, we'll talk more just about getting educated on what's really going on in the world and how do you live in the tension of God's burden and his blessings. He wants you to enjoy your life. He wants you to steward the blessings, but he also, you know, with much blessing comes much responsibility too. And I think if we all do a part, we can make a very big difference. Got 5 copies of my book, Embracing Your Freedom, A Personal Experience of God's Heart for Justice. I kind of call this a boot camp for the soul, because you're contending for those places. You know, Susan opened with the verse John 10:10. The first part is, the thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy. Jesus says, but I come that you have life and life abundantly. Well, the book, Embracing Your Freedom, is about getting your land back, taking back what the enemy's taken from you. But as you do that, learning about the captivity of those in the world and contending for them too. Gary Haugen's book is Good News About Injustice. You can text or email to get in the drawing, middays@myfaithradio.com. Here's the number to text, 877-933-2484. We'll be back in a minute. Thanks so much for tuning in to Middays. I'm Susie Larson, having a great conversation with friends from International Justice Mission, Susan Umler and John Good. And again, just want to remind you, you've got 5 copies of my book, Embracing Your Freedom, A Personal Experience of God's Heart for Justice. Half my royalties go to IJM. That's about contending for your freedom. And then there's stories intermingled throughout the book of rescues from IJM with their permission, just helping you contend for your freedom and contend for hers at the same time. And then also Gary Haugen's book, had a couple copies, Good News About Injustice, A Witness of Courage in a Hurting World. Gary is a brilliant man, and his books will just wreck you. So get 2 copies of that as well. You can email or text to get in the drawing. Text 877-933-2484 or email middays@myfaithradio.com. So Susan and John, we've got an email from Ellen Blessed, and she says this, another way to get involved with IJM. She said, Susie, in Middleton, Wisconsin, we've held a youth swimathon, a freedom swim, for 4 years now to benefit IJM. Listen to this. It has raised $185,000, almost all raised by kids between ages 6 to 18. If listeners want to learn more and maybe start a freedom swim in their community, check out freedomswim.org. This is what I'm talking about.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness. I love this. Say more about this, Susan. You obviously know about this.
I know Ellen. So hi, Ellen.
Yeah.
Ellen and her family are incredible. Essentially, this whole event started with she and her kids. They were having a conversation about slavery. She was teaching about slavery in our country. And her kids said something like, oh, I'm so glad that doesn't exist anymore, which opened the door for her to be able to explain that, no, there are slaves in the world today, and they're all around the world. And her kids said, well, let's do something about it. And they're a family of swimmers. So her kids said, well, What if we did like a swimathon and we raised money for it? So that's what they did. They set out year one, and it's just grown and grown and grown. And it is one of the neatest events. I've been able to be part of it. My daughter and I actually swam in it one year.
Wow.
And it is an incredible event. It's just all kids. They commit to swimming a certain number of laps. They go out. They've got a fundraising page. They have teams. They're able to get their communities to support them and pledge, you know, dollars per lap or an amount overall. And they set a goal each year, and they have just done incredible things in that community to raise awareness about slavery in the world today and about IJM. And to your point, they just this year alone, their event raised over $100,000.
It is amazing when you think about what is possible. And you said they have a vision to see other communities pick up this swim idea. So if you've got swimming in your family, swimmers in your family, check out freedomswim.org. You know, years ago when we went to D.C. to do some, I think we were there for the Global Prayer Gathering, did some lobbying and different things. It was just a powerful time. But they were doing some training. And back then, I want to say this was a decade ago, they were saying that guns and weapons and drugs were the two fastest, highest level criminal enterprises. But human trafficking and slavery were it's the fastest growing. And I'm sure it's probably overtaken. Has it overtaken guns and drugs?
Well, it's a $150 billion a year industry, human trafficking.
It's just unfathomable. But the thing that boggles my mind is how these traffickers and these slave owners look at human beings as worthless, that they can oppress somebody made in God's image and use them up and spit them out and then use the next person. And, you know, we get a 30,000-foot view about how to raise money, and we need to do that because it's such a global problem. But we also need to scoot close to say, these are people that Jesus loves, and this is why we're doing it. I mean, one person matters and in the whole scheme of things. And John, you were saying, talking about even how churches, there are churches that are jumping on board because they're getting the vision for the big problem, but also for the little problem that, I mean, the close-up problem. This is one person, and this, it goes out to 40 million. But don't forget, there's a five-year-old who's in trafficked, you know, because of slave owners. I you know, anyway.
That's right.
Stumbling over myself.
Churches are our natural partners, right? Mm. Because they get this. We believe that we are created in God's image, no matter our age, our ethnicity, our economic status. So churches get that. And that's why Freedom Sunday, we believe, has taken off. We started it, as I said, this is our fourth year. Last year, we had 18,000 churches around the world in more than 50 countries.
Wow.
So this is not just an American phenomenon. These are God's people in many different languages coming together saying, we want to do our share in this fight. You don't have to be a large church. There's a church in Charleston, South Carolina. It started, its first service as a church plant was 2 years ago, and it happened to be on Freedom Sunday. So they turned their inaugural worship service into a Freedom Sunday. And now they're coming onto their third anniversary, and it's now tradition that as they celebrate their launch, it's the message of justice is now woven into the lifeblood of this congregation, and that's through Freedom Sunday.
I have holy goosebumps. So how do you talk about, you know, just how Gary casts a vision as far as, I mean, the need is endless, it just seems. You guys are going after it. You know, but this criminal enterprise is growing as well. How do you decide where to go next, what to do next?
Well, actually, we have a new vision called our 2030 vision. And in the really broad level, our hope is that we can help catalyze a global revolution that's going to end slavery in our lifetime. So for us, that is a big vision. And for us, that means it's all in. We need everyone to be part of it. Individuals here in the United States, churches, small churches, big churches, corporations, governments. So now where Gary has kind of cast this vision and where we're going is, how can we get that whole world on board? How do we build partnerships with all those different entities to help train them to go do this work as well? And that's everyone, like I said, from governments to other nonprofits, to corporations and individuals here. How can everyone get involved? So that's really our big vision and where we're driving to is getting everyone involved to truly end slavery in our lifetime.
Wow. We just got a few minutes left. I know we had a question about aftercare. What does aftercare look like? If you've rescued some girls from a brothel. I mean, you imagine how traumatized they are. They don't know who they can trust. What have you learned works?
Yeah, a lot of, like all of our model, it's really based in partnership. So our social workers are there the second someone is rescued, and they walk with that survivor until they're restored. And our social workers in the field provide some of that direct trauma-focused therapy and care, but then they also act as essentially a case manager, and they'll work with a handful of other NGOs in those communities that we work that have been vetted and are trusted by IJAM to also provide some of that care that's needed. So that's really addressing any of the needs that are there. Housing, physical, educational, vocational, really whatever those needs are. And as often as possible, we try and partner with organizations that are also Christian so that that element of being able to be restored fully is there as well.
Mm. Again, correct me if I'm wrong. I've heard so many stories over the years as just walking with different friends from IJAM. So again, please do correct me if I'm wrong, but I do seem to remember. Well, I know that when you've worked with certain local governments, there's been the corruption, but then you've worked with people who are open, as you say, John, and then suddenly things have changed where people are not only accepting your help, but they're asking for your help because they're seeing the value of a just system. And the story that I'm talking about, I remember there was some man who was a brothel owner and he left, went back to Europe. And in the meantime, that local government started to see the value of a just system and asked the law enforcement officials from IJAM, come in and train our law enforcement to spot this stuff, to see this stuff. And in the meantime, this guy came back and he was at some bar and he was bragging about opening a boy brothel and a girl brothel, bragging about it, not knowing that the landscape had changed. And he never got a chance to do it because he was arrested. And I can't tell you what that did for me because things change. It's like once every step towards freedom matters, doesn't it?
Absolutely, it does. And I would point to India as a great example of how things can change. When IJAM started in India, the Indian government as a whole did not appreciate the fact that we were there trying to change a tradition that they didn't want to believe existed. And so there was a full-page ad taken out by the Indian government saying that there is no slavery in India.
Wow.
Full stop. Last year, the Indian government asked IJAM to be a co-sponsor for a national conference on anti-trafficking. And the Indian government has now said their goal is to end modern-day slavery in their country by the year 2030.
Come on.
So if the needle can move in India, we believe God can move it anywhere.
Every time you guys open your mouths, I get holy goosebumps. Just like, so how can we be praying for you and for IJAM and for those who are in these hard-to-reach areas?
I'd say from our staff perspective, our staff in the field continually say that one of the things that is most encouraging to them is knowing that people are praying for them around the world. So first, I'd say just praying for our staff that they have the resiliency and the energy and that joy they need to continue doing the work. And then obviously for all those who are still waiting rescue, that we could, as a global community, pray for those people to continue to have the faith to continue to hold on to the hope that they will be rescued.
So to be a Freedom Partner, it's literally $24 a month?
Yep, $24 or more a month.
To be a part of something. You know, I'm so constantly thinking eternity. I can't help myself. But I think about, you know, the people that you will meet in heaven who will be able to say, you know, it had something to do with my rescue or my freedom.
Yeah.
Seems like such a small thing to do to rescue the oppressed, which is so near to God's heart, you know?
I agree. It can. Yeah. I think a lot of times we, on this side of things or this side of the equation, can minimize what our prayers or what our finances can do. But it really does. It can help completely transform lives around the world, and it does do that. So
yeah.
My word would be don't minimize the role that you can play in this work, whether it's, you know, getting your church involved or being a Freedom Partner or being a prayer partner.
Every step towards freedom matters. Well, you two cannot thank you enough for your time. Thank you for being here today. Thank you, everybody at IJAM. We sure love and appreciate you.
Thank you,
Susie. Well, you've been listening to Middays. I pray you found some encouragement here. I also pray that you're challenged. I pray you think eternity and sow some seeds in IJAM. I pray you will. We'll meet you back here next time. Have a great day. Thanks for listening to this Middays with Suzy Larson podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link to spread the good news of the gospel and to grow the impact of Middays with Suzy Larson.